is a Cincinnati edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. You just heard us talk about great parks of Hamilton County, and the golf course is reopening on Friday. I want to let you know that the City of Florence sent us an email that said their courses are also opening on Friday, but like Hamilton County, there will be some restrictions. Miniature golf, the golf simulator, the indoor range, and Divot's Grill will remain closed, but golfing will be available on both sides of the river again on Friday. And many of us are working from home, so we want to get out a little bit this weekend. Our kids are also learning at home. Goodness knows they want to get out a little bit. That's on top of all the usual stuff we do at home. So how's your space holding up? If you're looking for answers on how to keep organized, tidy, and calm, give us a call at 513-419-7100, because we're joined now on the phone by minimalism coach Rose Lounsbury. Rose, thanks for coming back on.
Hey, Michael, it's so good to be here with you again.
It's good to hear from you, too. I have to wonder, though, if even an expert like you on these matters of staying organized and simplifying one's life are finding a hard time adjusting to this weird way we're all living.
Yeah, you know, my husband actually took a picture of his quote-unquote office the other day, which was me doing yoga, my kids playing Minecraft, and then his desk with papers scattered all over the place. And I put that on my social media, and people said, thank you so much for showing. Like, it can feel very chaotic, even for those of us who tend to pride ourselves on being pretty neat and tidy all the time. I've definitely noticed that it's more difficult right now with just the sheer amount of people that are working in one space.
That's what's so unique about it, is that it's not just the occasional jump on the computer to do some work-related email or maybe send a document, produce a document. This is your full workday happening inside the house, all the while kids are doing their full school day in the house, which is stretching the space a little bit. So you have the experience of being in the same space with people for the entire day, but you're all also doing your regular daily task. What do you think has been the biggest challenge for people in your orbit that you're hearing from?
I think the biggest challenge is being containers of time. I know that many parents struggle with the time confetti. You know, we talk about you've got 10 minutes here and 15 minutes there and 20 minutes here. And now that's exacerbated to the entire day. So parents especially are trying to work. You know, they're used to working 9 to 5. But now there are children there who need things between 9 and 5. So that time confetti is happening all day long. So I think the biggest thing is to find a way as much as possible to create some containers of time, both for your children's school, right? So maybe school happens during certain hours and you just kind of set those hours, and also trying to create time where your work happens, where hopefully your kids can be doing something else so that they're not interrupting your work. But I think above all, the biggest thing we all have to do is give ourselves some grace and realize that, you know, we're in a unique situation and it's not going to be perfect and no one is doing this perfectly. And we're all struggling and trying to figure this out as we go.
So tell me a little bit about how you're managing the schedule of your own personal work, but also homeschooling. And let's see if our listeners could glean some good tips from that.
Yeah, so what we did when we first found out that school was going to be at home, what I did was I sat down with my kids. I said, okay, guys, what's the most important thing that you need to do first in school? What's the most important thing? And they all decided it was math. So we said, okay, math is going to start every day at 9. And I thought, okay, we'll give an hour for math. So we just made a schedule together of, you know, the beginning of the day is math from 9 to 10. And then they have a little 15-minute break. And I said, okay, what's the next most important thing? They said, language arts. So then we put language arts for the next hour after that break. And we sort of built a schedule together using their input. My kids are 10. They're triplets. They're all the same age. So I kind of used their input on what they thought was most important in the day. And we sort of built a daily schedule around that. Now, when it comes to me doing work, that's where we have to get creative. I'm lucky that my husband is also now working from home. So days where I have client calls maybe at 9 or 10 and I can't be helping with school, he can help with school. We kind of trade off and on, but that took a while to figure out how to make that work. But one thing I've started noticing is Josh and I kind of touch base the night before and say, okay, I have a client call or he has a hearing or whatever we both have. And we sort of block out the day where one of us can be helping. And also that depends on the kids. So one of my kids, he is very self-sufficient. He can basically teach himself. So he has his Google Classroom and we kind of check in on him, but we really just sort of let him go. And then, of course, I have one who really needs you to sit there with her and help one-on-one and kind of guide step-by-step. And then I have one that's kind of in the middle of those two extremes. So we have found that we really focus on the one that needs the most one-on-one instruction. That's where we spend at least a good hour or two sitting side-by-side. And we're lucky that we have one that doesn't need that and one that kind of will come to us if he needs help. So we listen to what our kids had to say. We listen to each other on what our work days look like. And then we do our best on a daily basis to communicate and try to help them as much as we can. And then, like I said, at the end of the day, just realize that we are doing the best that we can do. And it's not going to be perfect, but I think it's better than nothing. It's the best that we can do in this time.
We're talking with minimalism coach Rose Lounsbery, who we always enjoy having on the show. Typically, we talk to you about cleaning up clutter. And I'm wondering if that's too much pressure, too much of a burden to bear right now. I see a lot of tweets from folks who are like, no, you don't have to write that novel you've always wanted to right now. It's okay to just take some time and chill out while this is going on. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. But is this an opportunity to maybe look around the house since you're spending so much time there and finally get rid of some stuff?
I think it is a really great opportunity. And the advantage of doing it now, obviously you are at home, but also realize that physical clutter creates mental clutter and mental stress. And we are all experiencing more stress than normal. I mean, just with what's going on in the world, we are all feeling increased stress. So realize that if you can create some open physical space in your home, it actually can relieve some of the mental stress. I mean, plenty of studies have been done that show that people in cluttered environments are more distracted. They have higher cortisol levels. They're more likely to eat junk food. We engage in some pretty unhealthy behaviors when our environment is visually or physically cluttered. So one way, easy way to get to that without having to do meditation or any of that kind of stuff is simply clean out a closet or clean out a drawer or put a few coffee mugs in the donation box. And that little act of creating space in your physical cupboard is actually going to open up space in your mind. And I would also add to that, that there's an element of having a sense of control when you do that. And we all know right now, there are so many things that we cannot control. We cannot control what's going on with the virus. We can't control that we can't go to our favorite bars and restaurants. We can't control that we're working from home for the first time. We're homeschooling our kids. So many things in life are out of our control. But you know what you can control? The state of your cupboards, the state of your garage, how many clothes are in your closet. So it gives you, in a situation where there are many things out of your control, it gives you a sense of control, which I think is something that many of us desperately want right now. So that's another added benefit to maybe taking advantage of this time to do a little decluttering. And like you said, you don't have to transform your whole house. You don't have to spend hours upon hours doing this. But you could tackle one little junk drawer or one little... See if that, just that little bit makes your life feel a little lighter, reduces your anxiety a little bit, and creates a little more peace, which I have found in my personal experience that that's exactly what it does.
Can we talk about junk drawers? Because I have a question about them.
Yeah.
I think all of us have one. And I mean, it's just ridiculous what you might find in there if you're ever just going through it leisurely. And I want to ask it in the context of storage units, because I recently did some decluttering, but I rented a storage unit to take care of some stuff. Is that cheating? Is the junk drawer cheating? Is the storage unit cheating? Is it just putting it off further?
Oh, well, I have a few thoughts on that. So the junk drawer, I call it the utility drawer, because truly, we all need that drawer. We all need a drawer for the cords and the paper clips and the sticky notes and just the little things, the scissors that you need to grab. But I would call it a utility drawer because you should be utilizing the things in there. It shouldn't just be junk. It should be utilitarian items that help you live your life. So the junk drawer is okay. It's all good. The storage unit, I think it really depends on the purpose. And I guess that would apply to the junk drawer too. Like, what is the purpose of that storage unit or that junk drawer? If the purpose of the junk drawer is, I'm just going to throw stuff in here because I don't know where else to put it, then I would kind of wonder, are those things really valuable to you? Do those things, are they useful to you? Are they beautiful to you? Why do you have them if you don't know what else to do with them? So if that's the reason you put it in the junk drawer, I'd say, yeah, you're kind of putting off making a decision about that thing. And that would be the same with the storage unit. There are plenty of good reasons to have a storage unit. if you're moving, maybe you're moving out of the country for a couple years, but you know you're coming back, so you don't want to sell all your furniture. If you're in between housing for some reason, those are good reasons to have it. Maybe if you are going to be doing an estate sale for someone in your family and you need a place to store things until you sell them, plenty of good reasons to have a storage unit. But if the purpose is, and you didn't tell the purpose, Michael, so I don't know your purpose here.
I have too many clothes, Rose. I have too many clothes. And so the winter clothes went to the storage unit. The summer clothes, spring clothes are now out into my closet. So I kind of alternate. Okay. But the whole time I'm thinking, no single guy needs as many clothes in his home.
That is a lot of clothes. And I'd also ask, you know, that you're paying for that storage unit unless it's included with your apartment or wherever you live.
Oh, no, it's all the way across town.
Okay, yeah. So I would start to think, you know, is the cost that I'm paying for that really worth it, right? Does the joy that you get from having such a varied wardrobe equal X amount of dollars? Like, you can put a number on that, right? You're going to pay monthly for 12 months because you're going to switch, I'm going to assume, the summer and the winter clothes. So add up a year's worth of cost and say, is dressing this way and having as many clothes as I want worth, I don't know, $300, $400, $500, whatever it is. And then based on that, then I would make my decision. So it's not necessarily cheating. Like, it's having a varied and extensive wardrobe brings you great joy. That's priceless, right? You pay whatever you want to have that wardrobe.
And I mean, what I was thinking about, and I didn't mean for this to turn into my own personal consultation.
No, we can make this all about you, Michael. This is great. I love it.
But I think a lot of people can relate because I hear what you say, and I believe in what you say, calming your spaces. And so it was important for me to not have them in these boxes and getting in my way with them out of the house. There is a certain amount of calm. But yes, they are still lingering somewhere and they are costing money. So there's probably a better method. And you would probably suggest going through these things more meticulously and deciding what's important.
Yeah, I would probably suggest ideally keeping all your clothes. And I'm a big fan of switching out for seasons, but ideally keeping them all in the house is best. Just because, I mean, you think how many days there are even in a season. Like, do you actually have the opportunity to wear and enjoy all those clothes, even in the season that they're in? So that would be another question that I would really ask. And since you obviously love clothes, you know, with the however much you're spending, $500, $600, however much dollars, would you enjoy more spending that money in that season to purchase new clothes? I mean, you could buy yourself a significant wardrobe every season with the amount of money you're spending on storage, and maybe you would enjoy that more. I don't know.
That's a great tip.
So there's lots to think about.
A lot to think about.
Update us on air about what happens with your clothing.
It's going to require you to visit. I only have a studio apartment, okay. And it's really ridiculous how much I have to do. I'd love you to come and help me out with that, so I'll look forward to that. But for folks who have larger homes and are dealing with more stress in their lives than fortunately I am, they are dealing with their kids at home, they are dealing with spouses and maybe other relatives living with them at this time, what's a good place to start if you are in the mood to finally declutter? Is there a particular room in someone's home that would mean the most to have a certain level of calm?
So if somebody is just getting started, I have a couple rules. And the first rule is you want to start with your own stuff. A lot of times when we're living with other people, we immediately want to say, well, it's that person's problem. I'm going to start with my kid's stuff or my spouse's stuff or my brother-in-law's stuff or whoever's living with you. And that never works very well because they often look at you and say, well, why are you starting with me? Why aren't you starting with you? So start with your own stuff wherever you have jurisdiction. And then the second rule is to start somewhere easy. I often tell people that when we're dealing with our stuff, we're not actually dealing with our stuff. What we're dealing with and emotions about our stuff, right? What all those clothes mean to you? What do they mean for your identity, right? How do you define yourself by our things? We do. So I always say, since our stuff is actually our emotions about it, don't start where the emotions are high. So for a lot of people, emotions are pretty high or strong around anything that's memorabilia, anything that might have been a gift or an heirloom, something like that. Don't start there. Start where you don't have a lot of strong feelings. So for a lot of people, honestly, the best place to start is their bathroom, because usually the things in there are under your jurisdiction. It's your shampoo, your lotion, your products. And most people don't have a lot of strong emotional connection to their nail polish and their body wash and all of those samples that they picked up at hotels. We don't really attach to them like we might attach to a handmade scarf that someone knitted for us. So the bathroom's generally a good place for many people to start, but it's not the only place, right? So wherever you have control of the stuff and it feels easy, start there. And then you can slowly work your way up as you develop your simplifying muscles, your decluttering muscles. You work your way out from there to the harder stuff. And then what also happens as you're working your way out is the other people in your home start to notice, and they will just start to get on board with you. I have seen it in my own life. I have seen it in the lives of every single personal client and student I have worked with. If you set the example first, the other people will follow.
Well, that was going to be my next question, actually, because if you are living with a spouse or a significant other or even children, how do you get them to buy into this mentality if it's not initially a group effort?
So the first way is you model it, right, by taking care of your own things. And then the second way is you invite them in with you. You don't command them to do this with you, but you ask their opinion. So one of the things I always have people do when they're starting to clear out a space is ask themselves, what's the vision for this space and what's the purpose for it? So if it was the kitchen, for example, what's the vision of your perfect kitchen? What's happening there? What does it look like? And then what's the purpose of the kitchen? And I would recommend that you get the ideas and involvement of your family for the young children can answer these questions if you put it in appropriate words. If you were in their bedroom, well, what do you want your bedroom to look like? If it looked exactly the way you wanted it, what would it look like in here? And then what kinds of things do you need to do in your bedroom? What do you do here? Well, I sleep, I get dressed, I play Legos, whatever they do. And then you actually write that down, and that sort of serves as the North Star, the guiding light of this project, right? Everything that's been in the room needs to adhere or suit or serve that vision and that purpose. And if it doesn't, then it needs to go. And so getting their input on the vision and the purpose really helps them get involved, because all you're doing is asking their opinion. And most people are more than happy to give you their opinion. And then if they want to get involved in the actual process of making it look like that, even better. But at the very least, they had a say. And I think that's the best way, is to invite them in, value what they have to say, respect what they have to say, respect if they want to keep things that don't make any sense to you. Because I guarantee you want to keep things that don't make any sense to anybody else. I often hear this with parents. They say, well, my kids won't let go of anything. They want to keep every little trinket and every little thing from school. Then I'll say, but don't you have some things, that broken bowl, that chipped mug that you from college?
It's
that
a two-way street, I imagine.
Right.
Rose Lounsbury is a minimalism coach. We have a link to her website, wvxu.org, inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Could talk to you all day, probably need to talk to you all day. Rose, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us.
So happy to do it, Michael. Good luck with those clothes.
Thank you. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7.